IB Nation, welcome back to another edition of the Irish Breakdown Podcast. It is Tuesday, February 25th. The month of February is quickly coming to a close. We're getting very close to March, which you guys know what that means. That means it is time for Notre Dame's spring practice, which begins in the second half of March, which will be a very interesting period for Notre Dame, very important period for Notre Dame, and a period where we're going to get a chance to see the Notre Dame transfer players for the first time. And I'm looking forward to that. But Trev, we were kind of talking a little bit about the transfers. You know, you and I have been last couple of days sort of plotting out the next couple of weeks of content. And, you know, as we get closer to spring, what are some of the things we're going to be writing about and talking about in shows and all that kind of fun stuff. And one of the things obviously we're talking about is the transfer portal. And I asked you a question today and I said, you know, this will be a fun thing to talk about, but I need to get Trev's opinion first. And so I asked you a question and I said, what side of the ball do you think will be most impacted by the transfer portal? And your answer was different than mine. And we don't often have a difference of opinion, not that we necessarily disagree on the impact, but which side be impacted more. And so I was thinking, you know, let's have that show. Let's have sort of not a debate where we're going to be sitting there like going back and forth at each other, but more of like a state your case. And this is what Loose Emoji and I used to do. We would have a point counterpoint thing that we would write for the magazine together. And I always love doing those with Lou because you had to bring your A game if you're going to try to say, take an opposing view of Loose Emoji. You better bring it. You better have it well argued and well defended and all that kind of stuff. And it's a lot of fun. And since we don't often necessarily have anything that's a difference of opinion, it can be harder sometimes to have those type of shows. But I thought, man, this will be a fun show. So that's what we're going to do. Trev and I are going to state our case on which side of the ball that we think has the best shot to will be most impacted by the portal. And looking back at the last couple of years, Trev, I think looking at 2023, it was going to most likely be the defense. I mean, Sam Hartman was going to be impactful, you felt, but it was probably going to be the defense. You know, last year in 2024, the argument would have clearly been, yeah, it's going to be the offense. You had Riley Leonard. You had all the receivers. There wasn't much of a debate. This year, I think it's a much more balanced portal class because, you know, 23 had Javonte Jean-Baptiste and Jordan and Thomas Harper, and you just felt like it was going to be an impactful class, where on offense, it was basically just Sam Hartman and Devin Ford. You just felt like the defense was most likely to be more greatly impacted last year offense. And this year, I think it's a lot more debatable, and I think it's a lot more up for discussion. And so we thought, hey, let's have that conversation. So what we're going to do is I'm going to pose the question to Trevor. He's going to answer it. So I told you we disagree, but I didn't tell you who has what stance. He's going to answer the question and then make his case. And then I'll have some follow-up questions and some thoughts on it and try to get him to you know, maybe answer some of my questions about why he picked that side or different things like that. And then if you guys have comments you want to make. So we want to make this show a little bit more interactive as we're doing it. So we'd love to hear responses to what we say, the points we made. We'd love to hear you guys kind of state why you think one side of the ball be more impacted, why you agree or maybe disagree with one of our comments, or if you want to ask a follow-up about one of our points of view, especially while we're doing it, get those in immediately. And then if I see them, I'll bring them up and vice versa. At the end of the show, we're going to do a daily mailbag. You can ask about whatever you want in that part of the show, but we will bring some stuff up during the show that is more geared towards your guys' opinions of what we're stating and which side of the ball that we're stating or what the case that we're making is stating. And then if you want to get a mailbag in at the end, just put MB on there and or put a mailbag emoji and we'll bring that up at the end. So when we're done having this conversation, we'll go to our daily mailbag. So go ahead and get those questions in now, or this is going to be a pretty short show, Trev. But I'm excited. This is going to be a fun conversation, Trev. But the one thing I know we agree on, we expect this portal class as a whole to certainly be impactful for Notre Dame in 2025. And I would argue this is the deepest portal class Notre Dame has had in regard to guys that I expect to have a relatively significant impact for the Irish.
I'm excited to jump into it today, man. When you asked me that question and we had a differing of opinions, one, like you said, it doesn't happen that often, but it was a really good idea for the show to paint the picture for you guys. Typically, whenever that happens, Brian and I just kind of talk it out through the show, and then that's how we format what we talk about. So really good idea to separate it. But at the end of the day, we came to the conclusion that regardless of who, it's not like – you know, I'm going to think one side of the ball's transfers isn't going to matter. And Brian thinks the other side of the ball's transfers aren't going to matter. It's really a discussion of which impactful supporting roles are going to be supporting a really already loaded star-studded cast for what Notre Dame has on offense and defense, which is a really, really fun conversation to be having. Because to your point, Ryan, in years past, it was, hey, Notre Dame has to go to the portal for a starting quarterback, for somebody to be under center. Notre Dame needs to go to the portal to get the majority, if not all, of their starting wide receivers. And so this is going to be a really, really entertaining conversation to have, and I'm ready to jump into it today, man. It's going to be a good one. It's going
to
be a good one.
Yeah, it is. And I think part of the conversation comes down to how you view the impact of that on that side of the ball. And it's going to be really interesting. So, again, I'm going to pose the question to Trevor. He's going to make his case for his side of the ball. I'm going to then have some questions for him and may not push back from the standpoint of maybe looking for clarification. I may have some things that I don't necessarily agree with that I may state. He may do the same for me, but it's more so just about getting out the argument for that side of the ball. As we also said, we'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on what we're talking about. I know that requires some of you to actually pay attention to the show. Imagine that. But I'm just kidding, you guys. But I am looking forward to kind of seeing the interaction because I think that it's debatable. I think that a case can be made for both sides. If I thought it was what I don't like is when you have debates where it's very clear that one side is, and this is one of the reasons I hate the debate shows on like ESPN and Fox, because it's very clear that sometimes you don't actually believe that. You just have to take a contrarian position because otherwise what are you going to talk about? Like, so that's why we don't force debate shows. But this is one where I genuinely think there's legitimate disagreement or a case could be made, like a legitimate case could be made for either side. I feel good about my side. I know you have a strong case to make for yours, and so I'm looking forward to that. But I do want to hear from you all in the chat what you guys think of this conversation, while also being willing. Like, I know Iden Benami just got a mailbag question in that's not related to the show, so like definitely get those in too, and we'll get those in at the end of the day. So you guys got your workout cut out for you today. But we would love to hear some of your thoughts about the side of the ball. And as we're making our cases, we'd like to hear what you think about our arguments and what side of the ball we're going with. So I'm ready to rock and roll on that, Trev. I'm ready to get going. So with that being said, Notre Dame this season, right, you've got 8 portal pickups so far for Notre Dame. You've got 3 on offense. Am I getting that correct? You've got 4 on defense. Mm-hmm. And 1 on special teams. So far, Notre Dame has landed 8 portal players in this offseason. You talk about wide receiver Malachi Fields on offense, wide receiver Will Pauling on offense, and then tight end Ty Washington on offense. Then defensively, you've got 2 D tackles in Jared Dawson and Elijah Hughes. You have a safety, pardon me, from Virginia Tech and Jalen Stroman, and then a nickelback from Alabama and Devontae Smith. And then, of course, you have the place kicker Noah Burnett, who honestly impacts the offense more, but we're not going to count him in this conversation. And so whoever's taking the offensive side is not going to try and cheat and be like, well, you got to count Noah Burnett because he can get you some points. We're not going to do that. So, Trev, I want to hear from you first. What side of the ball do you think is going to be most impacted by this portal class based on how we're projecting these players to fit and what they're going to do? What say you and why?
For me, it's the defensive side of the ball. And it took a little bit of thinking because it was both sides. Good arguments for both sides. But for me, I ultimately landed on the defense for a couple of reasons. I'm going to dive into the individual players down the road here in a couple of minutes. But initially, when you look at the portal class on defense overall, one, I think as a team, Notre Dame had a couple more questions to answer on the defensive side of the ball versus then the offensive side of the ball, mostly around replacing the talent that was leaving. So on defense, you have questions around the interior defensive line as far as who the starters are going to be and what the depth is going to look like. The nickel position, are you going to go to the transfer portal for the 3rd year in a row, or are you going to try to stick with a homegrown, younger, potentially true freshman candidate? And then, of course, the biggest topic of the offseason on the defensive side of the ball, one of, is the replacement of Xavier Watts. Now, full disclosure, like Brian and I have talked about before, not one person is going to be tasked with replacing Xavier Watts. They did not reach out to Jalen Stroman in the portal and say, excuse me, Mr. Stroman, do you think that you could be Xavier Watts for us? We'll even give you number zero on defense. How does that sound? Won't be anything like that, but he will be a factor in that. I'll talk about that in a little bit here. But the second one is I believe that the defense lost a little bit more proven production than what the offensive side of the ball did. You know, you lose Xavier Watts, you lose Riley Mills, you lose Howard Cross, you lose RJ Oben, you lose Jack Kaiser, you lose Rod Hurd, and you lose Jordan Clark. Now, when you go through and you look at it, I believe that Marcus Freeman with this defensive portal class, I believe that he stuck with his mantra of we go to the portal to fill immediate needs, but we are still heavily, heavily, heavily focused on high school recruiting. That's what the foundation of the team is going to be. For example, a lot of that younger talent is going to replace guys like RJ Oben and Jack Kaiser, right? Kingston Viliama, Asa is going to step up in a role. Madden Faremo could step up in a role. Teddy Rizak, all the list goes on and on. And then same thing for the edge rushers. We had a show about it last week where there's just a laundry list of guys that are poised to step up and fill the shoes of RJ Oben. But for the Xavier Watts of the world, Jordan Clark, the two interior defensive linemen, they went to the portal more for an insurance policy than a this is now going to be the foundation of our defense because they have a lot of people coming back. So for me, when I look at the defense overall, that's what swayed my decision when I look at the defensive side of the ball specifically. Now, when you get into the individual players, well, first, before I get there, Brian, any questions about overall?
Nope. I have some. I'll follow up kind of at the end, but I think my answers are going to be some of them might be answered in your individual conversation about certain players. So I'm going to hold off and just let you kind of keep rolling. So obviously second part of this conversation will be just, okay, what are your expectations for each player? And obviously we don't know what guys are going to do, Trevor. I mean, we're not, I've said this a million times. If I could predict the future, I would be a much wealthier person, you know, but we're looking at it from a standpoint of projecting what we think we're going to see. Or like we would have had obviously RJ Oben didn't have much of an impact, but we thought he was going to have an impact last year. So it's really looking at what is your expectation? Because part of this thing could come down to, well, I don't think that guy's going to be anything but a backup. You may think he's going to be a star or starter or vice versa. And that's going to impact how you feel about the overall class. So that's why I'm going to kind of wait, let you kind of do it. But I think having a conversation about specific players gives more insight into why you may think that side is more impacted. So I want to hear that first. So you can start wherever you want, Trev. You want to go front to back or back to front, however you want to do it. But I'm just curious kind of what you see as the role the role and the impact that you're going to see from each individual player. Or do you think we could see from each individual player?
Yeah, so I'll break down each individual player. And then at the end, and some of these might be in line with questions with Brian, but I do have some of my own personal question marks about the four guys that I'm about to bring up based on what they mean to Notre Dame's team, the questions that are going to be remain unanswered until the season starts, until after spring, fall camp, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm going to start on the defensive line because Notre Dame lost two starters there in Riley Mills and Howard Cross. And the first guy that I'm going to kind of start to break down is Jared Dawson. He was kind of one of the bigger name portal pickups along the defensive line. Notre Dame was in need of a bigger interior defensive lineman presence, especially with Riley Mills departing. Unfortunately, the Irish were without him from really the fourth quarter of the IU game on. And then obviously Howard Cross is departing as well. So when I went and I broke down Jared Dawson, one, the first thing is he brings size. You know, he's 6'2", he's over 300 pounds. He's kind of that in between of like a Riley Mills and a Howard Cross from a size standpoint. You know, Riley Mills, you had 6'5", 6'6", 300 pound guy. And then Howard Cross, you had your smaller, quicker, you know, he was 6'1"-ish, 280 pounds-ish. So I think Jared Dawson kind of fits a little bit in the middle. But one thing that was really highlighted was his efficiency. That has been a huge, huge theme for me so far in the offseason for Notre Dame is because the lack of consistency for that team last year kind of made us fans go through that little roller coaster of emotions that was the 2024 season, right? So you go through and you look at what Jared Dawson did last season in comparison to the two, and I'm going to really highlight Howard Cross here. When you go through and you look, he had more sacks than Howard Cross did, and I'm using Pro Football Focus for these stats and these numbers, just so you guys are aware. But Jared Dawson ended up having more sacks than what Howard Cross did and 154 less pass rushing snaps. So it's a really efficient line. Dawson played 10 games. Howard Cross played 13, given the injuries. And then you could make the argument that the final four games that he played and he was not 100%. So those numbers could look a little different for Howard Cross, but we're using the numbers that what we have. So I went through and I looked at, if you take Jared Dawson's efficiency numbers, you know, for the amount of sacks that he had, but the amount of pass rushing snaps that Howard Cross would have had, Dawson was on pace for 9.5 sacks on the season as an interior defensive lineman. That would have led Notre Dame's team this season, I believe. With that being said, one of the questions that I have for Jared Dawson, I'll get to a little bit later. But I don't know if he's going to be able to play as many snaps as what Howard Cross was able to play. So that's one thing. But if we're talking about role overall here for Jared Dawson, I see him coming in being a front runner to be one of the interior defensive line starters because of some of the question marks that they have on the defensive line. He fills an immediate need. He does, because with all the questions mounting, I mean, how will Onye fare in the offseason? Will Armel Mukum develop? Can Rubio stay healthy the entire offseason? Will Heinisch be able to carry more of a workload than what he had? Will Brennan Vernon or Devin Houston see the field much this upcoming season? I think Jared Dawson kind of comes in and fills the, hey, here's a guy that we know can play. We know he can play X amount of snaps. Now the question is going to be, Notre Dame's expectation is playing a long season. Will he be able to? Which is why I believe that this second transfer portal pickup of Elijah Hughes, I think, is going a little bit under the radar, rightfully so, because he doesn't have a whole lot of proven production. Some things that I like to see from the transfer portal is proven production from players who have shown that they can do it at the big level. Something I'm going to get into when I start talking about Devontae Smith and Jalen Stroman. But with Elijah Hughes, he provides a lot of depth. He provides good size, something that was kind of lacking on the interior from Notre Dame's defensive line a season ago. Some of it due to just the personnel that you had. Others, kind of question marks around who was playing, why wasn't another person playing, player development, all of those questions. But Elijah Hughes provides really good depth. He's good size. He's 6'3". He's 290 pounds. According to the intel that Brian actually talked to us about, he had really good testing at the camps before he committed to USC, before he went to go. There are examples of him on film playing multiple spots along the defensive line. I know that was something that we talked about valuing, you know, a Josh Burnham. You know, he can play big end and he can play Viper. How is that going to factor into Chris Ash's new defense? You know, Elijah Hughes against Nebraska, he had a sack, but he was rushing on the outside. Now, as far as his usage, which I know that Coleman, I saw that this question come through.
Yeah, I thought this was going to transition really well into where you could go with this one, Trevor's. And mm-hmm. Coleman asked, do we believe Elijah Hughes is really going to make an impact? He played sparingly at USC. I would just like to add this little quick thing so you don't have to do it. You can keep rolling on Elijah Hughes, but let's not forget Javonte Jean-Baptiste didn't play a whole lot at Ohio State either. Played a little bit more than Elijah Hughes, but I think when the staff identifies a certain player, you got that's maybe we wouldn't have known a whole lot about or didn't play a ton. You know, I think they've earned kind of a, okay, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt to a degree, but not every coaching staff makes the right decisions when it comes to who they do or don't play. Aiden Keanu-Ana played very little at Notre Dame, and he went to Cal and was a really good football player for them this past season, just as an example. But, yeah, it's a very fair question, and I know you're about to dive into that draft.
Yeah, you know, Notre Dame, you have to look at, in my opinion, you have to look at the portal a little bit differently because they're not just going to go out and throw a bag, especially in an interior defensive lineman, just because they – want to get a big name on campus, because there's a lot of schools out there that will do that. Now, would I have full transparency? Would I have liked to see a little bit more production from Elijah Hughes? I would have, but that's out of his hands. You know, ultimately it's up to the USC coaching staff on defense to put him out there and play. And in the moments that he did, he was productive. The thing that I like about him is he's versatile along the defensive line. I don't think, barring a jump in development, I don't believe him to come in and be a person in position to start day one. But if there's one thing that we learned about Notre Dame's defensive line last year, unfortunately, and hopefully it won't happen again this upcoming season, but injuries mounted up a lot and depth started to become a really big issue. And you're bringing in another defensive line depth piece that has played at the Power Four level. He played against Nebraska. He was a part of the USC strength and conditioning program. I'd have a little bit more questions if he came from Charlotte, if I'm just being honest with you. But for me,
I'd have even more questions if he hadn't played at least a year under Danton Lynn and Eric Henderson. I'd be like, that kid hasn't learned a thing in 2 years at USC, but at least he got coached for one good year. Yes. He got coached up for 1 year.
Yes. And so for me, that's how I see his role. I don't see him being a, hey, this guy might come in and dethrone a Gabe Rubio if he stays healthy, or if Jason Onye is ready to get back in full swing with the team. I don't see him coming in and that being his role. But I think he's going to add a lot of depth, and I think he provides you a versatile skill set along the defensive line that not a whole lot of your interior linemen have. Some of that is going to be depending on what Chris Ash wants to do with his defense. We talked about, we don't know what that's going to look like. We don't know if it's just going to be Big End and Viper, or we don't know if it's going to be interchangeable. Same thing with the interior. We don't know what that's going to look like for him. All things that we're going to start to find out. The next portal pickup is Devontae Smith that I wanted to talk about. And this one was more of the interesting ones because it is now the third year in a row that Notre Dame has gone to the transfer portal to get a nickel corner. As a refresher, I'm sure you guys remember, but in 2023, they went and got Thomas Harper. In this past season, they went and got Jordan Clark. And now for the 2025 season, they went and they picked up Devontae Smith. Couple of the things just jumping out that I like initially. He has better size than both of those guys. Thomas Harper and Jordan Clark were both 5'10". Thomas Harper, he was a little bit heavier at 195. Jordan Clark was about a buck 81, and I think it kind of showed a little bit on the field. You could kind of tell with number one running around a little bit out there, he didn't look as big as what Thomas Harper did at times.
Tough as heck, though. I mean, he'd stick his nose in there, but he was noticeably smaller than Thomas Harper. There's no question about it. Yeah.
Yes. Devontae Smith, he comes in, he's 6'205". And when you start breaking down their production, you look at what Thomas Harper did, and they were kind of used in a different aspect. Jordan Clark was used a little bit more in coverage. Thomas Harper was played a little bit more closer to the line of scrimmage, closer to the box. Now, I think some of the stats reflect that. Thomas Harper had 39 tackles. He had 2 sacks. He had 6 tackles for a loss. He had a forced fumble. He did have 3 passes defended. But then you go and you fast forward to Jordan Clark. Jordan Clark, 36 tackles. Only 3 less than what Thomas Harper did. He played in 3 more games. And they were more mid-level. They were definitely past the line of scrimmage. No sacks. I think he had 0.5 tackles for a loss. But he had 5 passes defended, and he had 1 interception this upcoming season. So Notre Dame with Jordan Clark got a bump in pass coverage production from a nickel standpoint. And then he only gave up 1 touchdown on the season, which is pretty spectacular seeing that he played in 14 games, and especially in the postseason, played some relatively pass-heavy offenses. And so Jordan Clark had a really good season for Notre Dame in 2024. But then you go through.
He didn't play a whole lot, was against Navy and Army, which I think speaks to the point you were making, is what he was brought in for was played in all 16 games, only played 11 snaps. He played 651 snaps this year. Only 11 of them came against the 2 option teams. And then he only played 16 against Northern Illinois, who spent much of the game in like 12 personnel and running the football. So it backs up what you said, Trev, that they viewed him as a guy that was going to be used more in coverage than what we saw from Thomas Harper last season.
Then you start breaking down what Devontae Smith was able to do, and he did this in 12 games in 2024. He had 30 tackles, so 6 less than Clark, 9 less than what Thomas Harper had. He had the same amount of passes defended as what Jordan Clark did with 5. He had 1 forced fumble. I think some of his stats, I think, reflect a little bit more of what Alabama's philosophy was on defense, more so than what Devontae Smith's skill set was. What I mean by that is you can go through, and I went and I broke down Thomas Harper's passing defensive statistics, Jordan Clark's, and Devontae Smith's. You know, Thomas Harper, he gave up 26 receptions on 43 targets. He gave up 236 yards receiving and a touchdown. Jordan Clark, he gave up 34 receptions, but it was on 54 targets. Again, he played more games. He gave up 308 yards passing, and he allowed 1 touchdown, 1 interception. Now, here's where I got excited about Devontae Smith. His per-target reception percentage was a little bit higher at 65.5. Jordan Clark was at 63. Thomas Harper was at 60.5. But, again, that's when schematics comes into play. Alabama's defense last year was willing to give up you know, the 1 to 3 yard completions if they were stopped at 4, if they were stopped at 5. And I think that's a reflection on the amount of yards that Devontae Smith allowed. Devontae Smith on 19 receptions only gave up 123 yards and 0 touchdowns. There was a play against Georgia where Dominic Lovett caught a little swing pass, and he had the sideline. Devontae Smith made a really good tackle in the open field, stopped it for about a 3 yard gain. And so with the addition of Devontae Smith, you kind of get some of the size and the potential of what Thomas Harper had near the line of scrimmage, but it doesn't seem like they're sacrificing anything from a coverage standpoint with him, because you are still getting the open field tackling of what Jordan Clark had this past season. Not a lot of wide receivers are getting yards after the catch on Devontae Smith based on what we saw at Alabama. Some of that is going to depend, again, on how Chris Ash is going to use him, but him as a player specifically, I like a lot of what they did, like a lot of what they did with Devontae Smith. Then the final person that we're going to cover is Jalen Stroman, and I know that he has been a hot topic of conversation. He missed every game in 2024 with the exception of the home opener against Vandy. But he's coming in, and seemingly he is now the favorite, similar to what Rod Heard was this, you know, last year before Don Shula really started taking big leaps in the offseason. He's coming in slated to be the favorite to replace Xavier Watts in the starting lineup. Now, like I said in the start of the show, replacing his production, Xavier Watts' production and his leadership and his impact, it's not just going to be the job of one person. But I think Jalen Stroman's going to play a really big factor. First and foremost, again, the size that you're getting with him is a step up. He's 6'1", he's 200 pounds, he's rangy, he has good sideline-to-sideline speed. But again, it's going to be tough replacing him, but I like the addition because you needed experience to complement a Don Shula on the back end. We talked a lot about a Don Shula's progression from when he was a true freshman. He was waiting in the wings. He wasn't seeing a lot of on-field playing time, but he was learning from Xavier Watts still being in the same room. This past season, he got to learn with him for 16 games of on-the-field tutelage with Xavier Watts. That is invaluable experience. I like this pickup because now Adon doesn't have to go from being the, I guess you call him the mentee, to the mentor in one season. And bringing in a guy like Jalen Stroman, I think, is going to help that impact. But not only that, I do appreciate the fact that he has played in a lot of big games. He's played in that experience. Because some of the question is, we saw it with Chris Mitchell this past season. What is it going to be like when you make that jump from Florida International to Notre Dame? You know, that's one thing I forgot to mention that I like about Devontae Smith. In one season, Devontae Smith played at Wisconsin, home against Georgia, at Tennessee, at LSU, at Oklahoma, and then against Auburn, in the Iron Bowl. Jalen Stroman brings a little bit similar experience. It's not as in-depth because Virginia Tech's schedule just wasn't as daunting as what Alabama's was this past season. But he still played, you know, in big games. He played at Florida State in 2023 when they were undefeated. He played at Louisville in 2023 when they had a good team. And I'm sure
yeah, he's playing in the ACC. It's not like he's coming up from Florida International or Marshall or something like that. This is a kid that's played in the ACC. I mean, so that's not a concern. And he did play against Vanderbilt, you know, who beat Alabama and Virginia Tech this year, which is still absolutely crazy for me to say. It is still for just the process in my head, man. It's just still absolutely nuts to think about that this guy, this team beat Virginia Tech and Alabama this season. I'm sorry. I just can't get over that. I'm sorry for distracting you from your time. I took away from some of your time, Trevor. I apologize.
No,
get over that, man.
Listen, Brian, you can take away as much talking time from me as you want to talk about Alabama losing. I'm all on
board. That's a good point. I just can't, you know what I mean? Like, it still hits me like, how the heck did they lose that team? Like, it still blows my mind that Notre Dame or that Alabama and you know, Virginia Tech both lost at least Virginia Tech had a lead at one point in time, late in the game, matter of fact. The Virginia Tech had a fourth quarter lead. Bama literally never led against Vanderbilt. I can't get over that. I'm sorry.
Crazy.
It still hasn't registered in my head. Sorry.
No, you're good.
Continue.
You're good. Jalen Stroman, only allowed one passing touchdown his entire career at Virginia Tech before heading over to Notre Dame, which is, again, shows that when he was on the field, he was a very, very productive player. He was getting day two NFL draft buzz prior to the 2024 season. A lot of that was pending on, hey, can you build on your 2023 season? Unfortunately, he wasn't able to, but that's one of the reasons why he's stepping onto the stage at Notre Dame. That's why he entered his name into the transfer portal, so on and so forth. And so those are the four transfer portal players from the defensive side of the ball. Now, I'm also a realistic person, and I understand that all four of these guys aren't picture perfect, and there's no question marks there. You know, in order, and I ordered these on purpose because I have my list of, you know, the least amount of question marks to the most amount of question marks. And that's how I ordered some of these questions that I have about these players that we're all going to find out together as the season goes on, off season into the start. But how will Devontae Smith be used? Will he be more like Thomas Harper? Will he be more like Jordan Clark? Will it be a hybrid of both? Some of that depends on Chris Ash's scheme. But that's a question that I have around Devontae Smith. I have no questions around, especially based on last season playing in 12 games. I don't have a lot of questions around his health. I don't have questions around his athletic ability or his ability to play in this defense. With Jared Dawson, is he going to be able to play in enough snaps? He is replacing one of two guys who played a lot of snaps for Notre Dame in 2024. Again, I do think you could have a similar conversation with Jared Dawson that you do with Jalen Stroman, in that replacing Howard Cross and Riley Mills isn't just going to be a one man's job, but it's still a question. Will he be able to play that many snaps? Will Jalen Stroman be able to finish the season? That is one question that I have for him. He played in one game in 2024. He played in 11 in 2023 and 11 in 2022. Now,
the 11 and 22 was all that they had. I believe 22 was the year that they had the Virginia game got canceled because of the shooting.
That's
where,
right,
sadly, three Virginia players lost their lives and they canceled the game. But just want to make sure that
we're clear on that. Thank you. So when you go through and you look at the expectations of a Notre Dame season, notice how Brian and I, when we talked about Notre Dame's expectation, their floor for this season, their expectation for the season, it didn't stop at 12 games. For me, at Notre Dame, your expectation is to play a minimum 13 games with this expanded playoff. For me, my expectation of this team is to make it at least back to the quarterfinals. And that's how I look at it. So can guys like
Jared Dawson. We had that conversation yesterday, Trev. So when you look at evaluating these portal players, it's you anticipate the impact they're going to make on a team that you expect to at least get back to the quarterfinals, which I said yesterday, Sean and I both agree that barring the draw, right, the context of if you're the 5 seed and the 4 seed is Kansas State, then I expect you to be in the semifinals. But, you know, I mean, if you get a Georgia, if you get an Ohio State, I mean, like a team that you're like, okay, you battled. They were maybe better than you. You battled your tails off. You just got beat by a really good team. Yeah, it's not as good as we'd liked it, but it's still a minimum. Hey, you're still turning the corner. So you see it the same way that we do. So that's interesting context, which I think is helpful.
Yep, absolutely. And so the final question for me with the transfers is Elijah Hughes. Will he develop into the player that the coaches believe that he can be? Because I think in the defensive line room, there has been question marks around development. And we could spend an entire show about the question marks around some of the players that we have and some of the evaluations of some other players as their time at Notre Dame has gone on. So that's going to be a question for me with Elijah Hughes. What is his role going to look like? I don't know specifically. I wish I could give you a snap count. Again, if I could see into the future, Brian and I would be much wealthier people than what we are right now. But I do believe that he's going to be a good depth piece. It's just going to be a question around, can Al Washington continue to develop him? So for me, that's where I'm at with the defensive side of the ball, Brian.
This is one little tidbit that I did think was worth mentioning is, as far as I know, now I do have some questions about Jalen Stroman, and I've actually reached out to somebody today to find that out because he only played 4 games in 21, and then he only played 1 game in 2024. So my question is, does he have an additional year of eligibility left beyond this year? Because he would have had a red shirt as a true freshman, only played 4 games, according to Pro Football Focus. And then, so I'm trying to find that out. But the one guy we do know has multiple years of eligibility is Elijah Hughes, which I think when you're going to talk about impact, Trev, don't you kind of have to think about that? Like, he's part of the portal class. Yes, we focus so much on the current year, but in an instance where you're talking about overall impact. There, that's the only guy that we know of that's going to actually be able to impact the team for potentially for multiple seasons, which I think factors into that. So that's a good observation by Charlie Weiss's last belt loop is Elijah Hughes could only play 5-10 snaps a game this year, but if he becomes a difference maker next year, that kind of counts as an impact in this portal class. And I'm curious, did that at all kind of did that factor in at all to your thought process? And if it didn't, does it? I mean, obviously, I would assume it solidifies it a little bit, knowing that you've got two cracks at this for him to be able to make an impact.
It does. To be honest, I went through the lens of the impact for 2025 and what I thought that role could be. I knew that Elijah Hughes was going to be here for multiple seasons. I just didn't know when we're comparing kind of apples to apples here with the offensive side of the ball and the defensive side of the ball. I didn't know how much I wanted to weigh Elijah Hughes' impact potentially for 2026 into the 2025 season. So that was my deciding factor of leaving it kind of out of the bullet points of notes that I have. But it is very noteworthy, Charlie, because his impact does go beyond this season, which is something I don't think any of the other transfers can say. So that is a big part of it.
So let me ask a couple follow-up questions. So let me first say, excuse me, what I'm seeing in the chat so far, Trev, is that the fan base is having a similar battle that we are. And you're seeing it in some of the comments, like Insured by Big says, I think offensive transfers tend to make a quicker impact due to my opinion that it takes time for reps for defensive players to mesh. So that's one obviously that has for the offense. Andrew Gilmore had said, I say offense, but it's dependent on Fields and Wisconsin transfer, obviously referring to Will Pauling. But then he follows up with, and this is where I think Andrew kind of is reflecting the struggle and the debate. He says, he says offense because of those two. Then he follows up with says, but the Virginia Tech safety, Jalen Stroman, the nickel, Devontae Smith, and the Louisville defensive line will play key roles. It's close. And I think it shows like, yes, this is not like a no-brainer, like seriously, why did you make like Brian? Come on, why did you make the guy that works for you to take the bad side of the argument? You know what I mean? Like, why did you take the bad side of the argument? Just to whatever. It's like it's a very fair debate that I don't think is easy, and I think you're seeing that. Tommy Gunn said offense will have more of an impact, but the defensive impact will be more important. So if Tommy was answering this in the way that I think you and I intend this conversation to go, I think Tommy, correct me if I'm wrong on this, how I'm reading your comment is like the stats will be greater from Malachi Fields and Will Pauling. They'll produce more than nature of their position, things like that. But the impact, the non-statistical impact from the defense will be greater. I believe that's how I'm reading Tommy's conversation or Tommy's comment there. So like to me, Trev, that's something that I want to ask you. Is that kind of the argument that you're making, similar to what Tommy is saying, where it's not so much like, dude, no one's gonna on defense is gonna produce as much as Malachi Fields is gonna produce, but the impact is needed? I mean that's kind of a follow-up question that I have. Do you see it that way as well?
I do, and I think that's just typical when you go through, and this isn't just specific to Notre Dame, but I think when you go through and you talk about the impact of players in general in football, your eyes are going to be drawn to a box score, to a stat sheet. And what's going to be more, for lack of better terms, like attractive to look at? A wide receiver that ends the season with 9 touchdowns and 750 yards receiving and 13.5 yards per catch? Or a Jordan Clark type of DB who ends the season with 36 tackles and a pick. Not, but you know what I'm saying? But Jordan Clark's impact was felt all through the season. That's how I evaluated this. Because from a stat sheet perspective, like
how do you quantify what a receiver does compared to what a nickelback does? Yes. A nickelback could have one tackle an entire game and no pass breakups and nothing of statistical impact. And you're like, yeah, but did you watch the film? He was all over the slot receiver, which is why he had no impact because they never threw the ball there. It's going to look different where when Malachi Fields has a good game, you're like, okay, 7 catches for 110 yards. That's one of the challenges of evaluating. Like with the defensive end, you kind of consensus impact because, A, the defensive ends are on the screen more. And two, when a defensive end or a defensive tackle or a linebacker has a big game, there's a statistical aspect to it. Why was Manti a runner-up? Because he had the numbers. He had 100-plus tackles. He had 7 interceptions. And you could look at and quantify it statistically. You couldn't always quantify statistically how good Benjamin Morrison was. Because if he was really playing well, he was not going to have any statistics because you weren't going to throw him the ball at him. That's a good point, Trev. And I think that's the heart of more of where we're going with this conversation is more of an impact, more so than who's going to have like Riley Leonard. His stats weren't like, oh, my gosh, like, did you see the numbers he put up? And you look at like what Cam wore, but the impact was enormous. Which is why there's no debate who had the bigger impact on offense or defense. It's clear. Even if you take away the receivers, it doesn't change. I mean, the impact was great. Here's a couple follow-up questions for you. Mm-hmm. How many of the guys on this defensive portal class do you see starting for Notre Dame in 2025? And by starting, it can mean one of two things. It can mean A, they literally start the game, or B, they play starter snaps. So not Rod Hurd, to me, I don't count as a starter. When a defensive tackle is only playing 5 fewer snaps than the starter, that's starter snaps. So, like, Jaden Osbury may not have started any games or many games, but when I look at Jaden Osbury, however, I'm like, that dude played starter snaps. He played starter minutes, which is why he had so much production. You know, I mean, when you look at the overall statistics for the Notre Dame defense this season, and you look at the number of snaps, for example, at linebacker, yeah, Jack Kaiser had 641, Drake Bowen had 615, Jaden Osbury had 438, Jalen C had 433, Kingston was at 343, he'd have been close to 400. So, like, those guys are playing starter snaps, in my opinion, as opposed to a defensive end that comes off the field for 10 to 12 snaps a game. So just so we're clear, it can be. You could think that Jared Dawson's going to be the number 3 D tackle behind Heinisch and Gabriel, but he's going to play 20-plus snaps a game. That would count as that for me. So just your projection, how many of these guys do you see being starters this season or playing starter snaps?
For me, I'm in the same boat as you are. I evaluated on starter snaps. I don't take too much weight into who trots out onto the field because some of that's dependent on the opponent that you play, especially on defense. So for me, I'm going to say 3 of the 4. I do. I think Devontae Smith is right now the front runner at nickel. I think Jared Dawson's experience is going to cause him to play, and his efficiency is going to cause him to play starter snaps. And then right now, I think Jalen Stroman is kind of the front runner to be on the depth chart, the guy that replaces Xavier Watts, especially early on in the season. You know, you go through and you look at Notre Dame's schedule. You start down in Miami, you have Texas A&M at home, and then you don't have another bye week until after the USC game. And so you're going to really rattle off 6 games of quality opponents, which include traveling down to Arkansas, home against Boise State, back-to-back games where you've never played them in your program history. Then you end that little run with your rival at home. And I think the defensive staff is going to err on the side of playing the more experienced and talented player in Jalen Stroman. Well, not more experienced and more talented, the more experienced player who has a lot of talent in a Jalen Stroman, especially early. I think he's going to play a lot of snaps. Like we've talked about before, I think that the safety room is going to rotate more than what we've seen this past couple of seasons because, one, you're not taking Xavier Watts off the field. Two, you have too much talent in that room to only just play 2 guys. I think the safety rotation this upcoming season is going to look a little bit more 3 to 4, somewhere in that range. But I think Jalen Stroman is going to get starter snaps. So out of those 4, I would say 3 of them play starter snaps. And then I think 2 of them in Devontae Smith and Jared Dawson will just be that they'll roll out and just be number ones on the depth chart, if that makes sense.
So Stroman, you right now think somebody else starts opposite the Don Shuler over Stroman?
That one I'm
happy. You just need to see him healthy again. Is that the big thing? Just need to see him healthy again. Okay, that's fair.
Yes. That's my thing. Health with him. And then I think that as the season progresses, I think they're going to be a little bit more open to the idea of starting a Luke Talich or a Jadon Blair or a Bronte Johnson as the season progresses with him. But as the season goes on, I don't know who comes in and starts a game in front of a Devontae Smith. So that's how I'd answer that one.
Interesting. Here's a question I have for you. Of the group you mentioned, who do you see being a stud? Like a that guy's a difference maker. Like a, wow, really glad that you got that guy. Javon, it doesn't have to be a Riley Leonard. The quarterback's always a bit of a – it could be a you know, what we saw from Javonte Jean-Baptiste 2 years ago. It can be Nick McLeod in 2020 was a huge addition to that defense, mm-hmm. played really good football, and I don't think they're in the college football playoff if Nick McLeod doesn't come in, right? That's an important pickup. Who is that guy in this group? Who do you see anybody being that guy in this group?
Yeah, for me, it's Jared Dawson. I think the level of consistency that he's going to provide at that position is going to be huge for this defense. I think there's some people, and myself included, because I had to kind of go back through and look at some of the stats. The interior defensive line play was real shaky to start the season last year. Riley Mills and Howard Cross included. There were some games where we walked away. I mean, Northern Illinois, you know, where we walked away where I didn't really see a whole lot of them. And kind of took up until that bye week to really say, okay, these guys have turned it around. Riley Mills from about Louisville on until he got injured against Indiana was pretty consistent. But the first month of the season, really for the majority of September and the one game in August, wasn't as impactful as he should have been. Howard Cross dealt with a lot of things. I mean, he had the hamstring earlier in the year, finally worked back to healthy, kind of got some things turned around. We saw that consistent play from about Louisville to Florida State. And then he got banged up against Florida State and was never the same. So I think the level of consistency that we're going to see from Jared Dawson coming in and having experience in those games, having the efficiency numbers that he does, and just his overall size, I think that's going to bode well for the interior of the defensive line. So out of those four, I'd say him.
So you think – okay, okay. How many of them do you view as having a that answers my question. I don't have a whole lot to add, Trevor, a whole lot to ask. I think you did a really nice job of explaining the impact that you see. I get the sense that from what you're saying is that you think that Notre Dame was already elite on defense and this group's going to come in and in some way, shape, form, or fashion, either starters or role players, is going to help the defense maintain. Is that fair?
Yes. Okay. Yes, because we've talked a lot about if Notre Dame can just stay at where they were at in 2024, this team has a really good shot at making it back to the national championship. And so for me, these guys come in and pair well with the people, all the returners that they do have coming back, because again, it goes back to that conversation around what Tommy Gunn's brought up, you know, of offense will, I forgot how we worded it, but it was that conversation that we had around the stats and the numbers.
Yeah, he said that they'll have a – yeah, it was basically saying like the impact will be greater on offense, but the play of the defense will be more impactful, meaning like one side will have more statistical production, the other side is going to have more of a meaningful impact on the defense is what I believe we were saying. So, yeah, that's fair. All right, anything to wrap up, Trev? Keep in mind, if you guys have things you want to share about our thoughts, about who do you have, different things like that. D-Rock Irish says, not that you need my affirmation, but Trevor, nice job. He said he's waiting to give his opinion until he hears my arguments, which is well done, D-Rock. You're truly allowing the debate to happen. Hear both sides and then make your argument. So Tommy says offense will be more sizable, defense will be more important. I think that's a great way of summing it up. And that's the statistical versus impact, you know, meaningful impact on the overall unit is kind of what he's saying. So I think based on what our criteria is, Tommy would then say that the defense, he'll be with you on your side, that the defense is going to have the greater impact because that's what this is about. It's not just about numbers. Because it's almost always the offense is going to have better numbers unless you go out and get a defensive end like a Jared Verse from Florida State, and Braden Fisk who have and combined for a bunch of sacks and tackles for losses. That's how it's going to kind of be. Especially if it's built around the defense.
Yeah, the way that I look at it, you know how in post-game shows we talk about the things that stood out to us, and a lot of it is, did you see Riley Leonard jump over Malachi Starks? Did you see Jeremiah Love's 98-yard touchdown run and all that? But then upon further review – we talk a lot about the things that might have been missed initially. And that's kind of the difference that I see between offensive and defensive is once you go back through, a lot of those defensive guys are going to be, you know, Jeremiah Love's going to get his, Fields will get his, Greathouse will get his. But then the upon further review show is going to be one of those where like, yo, did you see the game that, you know, Jared Dawson had? Did you see the stop that Devontae Smith made or the route that he cut off and stuff like that? So that's how I see it, man. But that's no, outside of that, nothing more to add. Nothing more to add.
Love it. All right. Good stuff, Trev. You made your case. So my turn now to start talking about the offense. Not in a rebuttal, but I there's not a lot I disagree with you on the defensive side of the ball. You know, I like the defensive tackle class. I think you and I are on the same page as Jared Dawson. I think Jared Dawson's going to be an impact player. He would be the one guy that right now I feel most confident being an impact player. Jalen Stroman would be number two. I think there's a chance Jalen Stroman becomes an impact player. The only question I have on Jalen Stroman is they didn't allow him to cover a whole lot at Virginia Tech. You made the comment he only gave up one touchdown in his career, and then other people said, well, he only had four pass breakups and never had an interception. PFF only has him down for having played 24 coverage snaps in four seasons. As much in 2024. He only played one game in 2024 and only played four defensive snaps in 2021. I went and looked it up, and I asked this question for follow-up, and he did play a bunch of special team snaps in 2023. So that is kind of where that came from. So so I'm going to kind of get off of mine before we get going into mine. I did want to ask people to do us a favor, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button, hit that notification bell, share this podcast, give us a 5-star review. And of course, as always, make sure you've signed up for the message board at boards.irishbreakdown.com.